coming in and doing these 12 steps. A lot to do. I come in here week after week and done a terrific job. The group's giving you some flowers to take home.
Thank you.
We'll let those other sisters get a hold of that. And a coin.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Love you. Hi, I'm Stephanie, a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I always say I'm grateful, and you hear it every week. I'm grateful because I know I'm dealing with a disease, not an immoral act. And when I first came in, I felt lower than, I didn't look it, but I felt lower than anything because I thought, I didn't think I knew any nuns that drank or anybody. And I found out that this was a disease, not a bad thing. And I had to do something about it. Doing these 12 steps, I've tried to live the steps. I try to live them all the time. But doing them, giving them each week, really made me more conscious of my responsibility to really live them well. And I'm glad I had this privilege. When I first was asked, I thought, all these weeks, but they have been fruitful weeks. Tonight I had to forego a prayer service. One of our sisters died suddenly at the hospital, and she just celebrated her jubilee, and she was an artist. She designed our new mother house, and I knew her. She's always late for everything, and we'd tease her. You're going to be late for your own funeral. Took her to the hospital, said she had pancreatitis, and within a couple hours, the powers to be were called to the hospital that she was dying. And she said, I am dying. So she was prepared. So, you know, I couldn't be there tonight, but I'll be at the funeral tomorrow. But this is important to me. This is important. It says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It's a monumental task. It's monumental. It's lifetime. It's an everyday task. And we have the freedom from bondage. And practicing and living the 12 steps. And number one, we said we were powerless over alcohol. And our lives had become unmanageable. And I can remember when I was in Gateway, I think my life was unmanageable. I had a position, I was a principal, I ran a school, I ran a diocesan program, I had every job you could have, and I did it well. And all of a sudden, I still was doing it, but I'm wondering how well I did it under the influence. I never went to school drunk, but you hear so many people say the results of drinking the night before were still there. And I had to come to believe that my life did get unmanageable. And when you do crazy things, drive under the influence, and not know if you put where the park. Well, I knew where the car was parked, but I didn't know if it had a dent in it or not. And if I did, the nuns would let me know right away. We have one that goes around the parking lot and checks cars. And then she says, wonder who did that. But the last time there was a big dent in a car, the car went to the garage immediately, and guess who did it? The one that looks around looking for everybody else. She never let on, and it was a $3,000 job. So we never heard any more about it. And then we had to turn our wills over to the care of God. I had a God. I always told you I had a God. But I had a fearful God. And when I was drinking, I knew I was on my way to hell. I was going to go. Today I have a relationship with that God. And I hope I'm not going there. It's a little too hot. And then I made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God. And sometimes I take it back. You know, I say, I'll do your will, God. And then all of a sudden I think, why did I say that? Because I'm going to have to live up to that. And as we said, our fourth step, we start looking at ourselves, not at my neighbor, and seeing where I was wrong and what I did and how I affected. And I always thought I didn't hurt anybody but myself. But when I look back, and doing these steps now, look back and think of the people I live with and the anxiety I put them through, not knowing if I'd be killed or how I'd come home, banged up or whatever. And I didn't ever think that. I thought, I'm okay. I'm not hurting them. It's hurting myself and them and the people around me. And then I admitted to God and to another person. And I told you I have a spiritual director, Father Ray, who worked at Serenity. He was the chaplain there. And he knows all about alcoholism. And so, and I made amends, did my fifth with my sponsors too. But I'm very comfortable with him. And, you know, it's not a one-time deal. It's not a one-time deal. It's got to be all the time. Every day I try to look back and see where I failed or what I did, you know, who I hurt. And I'm learning to just let things go by. I don't have to react to them. Like I said, sometimes we have a person who's very sensitive. And I have to watch what I kind of watch that I don't rock the boat. And there would have been time I wouldn't have cared, but I do care now. And it's easier to let things go. Like today she took the tablecloth off the table and put a new one on, and I thought, I was going to say, you know, what is this with you with the tablecloth business? I shut up. That's a miracle. That wouldn't have happened in before. So I let on, I didn't even see her do it or whatever. And then we're having a little party on Saturday and she has the table set already. I don't know where we're going. I know we have a funeral tomorrow, but that's not going to hinder us from getting ready for Saturday. But anyway, the table's set. So I didn't ask why, because if I asked why, somebody else might ask why, you know who? My little friend. That was funny today. They bring the body in about an hour before the families come. And they announce that the body is coming, and then in respect, we line up while they're bringing the body in. So I was coming in, and she said to me, did the body come yet? I said, yeah, an hour ago. What? I said, they announced it 3 times. Well, she never heard the announcement. She felt bad. And I said, well, you can go down now. She's there, you know, and whatever. Step 5, I have to be well aware of. And 6, my defects. Like I said, I got to work on those all the time. And every time I think I have one conquered, a new one shows up. Where'd that come from? You know? But it's constant. It's daily. But because of the way the program is designed, we're not on edge all the time wondering, whoa, I don't live every day saying, oh, gee, what did I do? But that's why we're aware of it and then our shortcomings and then continue to clean house. And every evening, I look over the day and see, was it a really good day? Could have been better? What did I go out of my way for somebody? You know, sometimes I get comfortable. I don't want to do it. Especially, I just get back to my quarters and some get paged. Now what do they want? You know that feeling? What do they want now? And because I have this program, I've come a long way with that. I drop what I'm doing and go see, you know, what they want and try to help them out, because a lot of times that's what they need. And then made direct amends to the people, I do that. If something comes to my mind of somebody that I harmed or did something to, I try to find them and say, you know, I didn't mean to do that, or you misunderstood me, and so on. And of course, 11, 10, we continue to do that. And then 11 is sought through prayer and meditation. And as I said, I take time out in the morning. Today was crazy, though, because the papers didn't come till 6:30. So when you have about 20 people saying, where are the papers? Like, I know. I'm waiting for the guy. And he said, sister, the papers are late, not because of us. And I know that. And we have one. She says, can't you call Butler? I said, no, I can't call Butler. I don't have a phone number for it. But they're funny. I mean, it's their whole life, that newspaper, and there's nothing in it. I check the obits. I'm not in it yet. And you pray through the day. Well, get me through. What am I going to say? You might meet a cantankerous patient, and they're not happy, and you're trying to think, you know, when you get in there, what can you say that'll make their day? And I try to make their day. We had one, she moved away, and I miss her. She was so bad. She was so bad. She'd throw us out. I don't want you. Well, who do you want? The priest. The priest isn't here. Oh, you'll do. I miss her. I miss her because she was a challenge. I like those kind. They keep me busy. I had patients at the mother house too. She was about this big, and she on Sunday she'd wear a veil. Every other day she didn't wear a veil. But with a priest that had mass on Sunday, she'd wear a veil. So one morning, I was real busy. It was a Monday morning, and the schedule was all skewed. Somebody wasn't going to the doctor. Somebody decided they had to go to the doctor. I had to get a driver in because we didn't have enough drivers. She's standing there looking at me, and I said, what can I do for you? Comb my hair. And the aide just went by, and she said, I just combed your hair. Steffi's got to comb it. Me, I had to comb her hair. And those are things that, you know, I could have said, well, she just combed your hair. You don't need a comb. You do it. And I don't always do it, but I try to be aware where they're coming from. When I was drinking, I wasn't always aware of that. And of course, 12, we practice these principles in all our affairs. And we do that by helping the suffering alcoholic. And when I first came in, I mentioned before Claire Croats was my co-sponsor. And somehow, they indoctrinated me right away. There was a woman, she's dead now, Elsie. And Claire called me up, she says, meet me and Mevy, we're going after Elsie. She's drinking up a storm and we have to go. I'm saving everybody now. I'm new. I'm saving the world. So we go looking for Elsie. And it's a bad winter night. I don't even go out in the winter now, but I did then. And we go all the way to the east side up to English Avenue. And we get in this driveway and I get stuck. Backing out, backing in, backing out. Finally, the woman comes to the door. We had the wrong house. And I said to her, she said, what, can I help you? I said, yeah, I'm looking for Elsie Shriver. Oh, she lives over there. So we go over there, and it's pitch black. Nobody's home. She said, I think it was that lady who said, you might want to try Dunsey's. Now, up to this, I never drank in a bar. But I go to the bar. And I walk in and I'm looking around and I said to the bartender, I'm looking for a woman by the name of Elsie. He said, we just threw her out. So we had no luck with Elsie that night. I don't know where she went. We didn't find her. Next day, Claire calls me and says, we're going for Elsie. I said, not again. She said, yes. We're going to her house, and the family's there to do an intervention. Now, I'm Carrie Nation. I'm saving the world. So we go in. We're at the kitchen table. Elsie's there, her family, and Claire, and Mevy. Now, Mevy wasn't too swift either. I mean, we weren't sure if she was on the up and up. So anyway, all of a sudden, Elsie gets up. And I'm still talking to the family what we would like to do. And Claire gets up like a bat out of hell after Elsie. Elsie's crawling under the sofa in the living room to pull out a bottle of beer. I never saw Claire Crest lose her cool. She was tall, stately, wonderful lady. Grabs the bottle and she says, she grabs her, goes out to the car, my car, we're taking her to the hospital now. Family sitting in there. I get wedged between the garage door and somehow. I don't know how I got out of there. I don't know. But we got and zoomed up to the hospital. And of course, they had detox in those days. Well, you remember we did that. And they put her in, took her and then we left. I don't think we stayed. They said they would put her up in detox. Well, she had to go to the main hospital. She had pneumonia. But she was in that hospital for 8 weeks. And then another time I got called to go to the Mill Creek. And I used to do Mill Creek too. And they said there's a woman, and I forget, and I kind of thought, I think I know who it is. Well, when I got there, it was the woman I thought. She's still sober. And I don't know how much registers when you do this. I miss those days. I miss those 12-step calls. I did a lot of them. Today we say you go to a detox and then you go to a rehab. There was something personal about doing that. And I think we lost that. I don't know. Oh, and then another one. That was out in Harbor Creek. I was around the town, I'll tell you. I know Erie. And I thought I didn't, but I do. Well, anyway, I got a call, and Mary Cheswick and I went. And I walk in the kitchen, and I take a flop, because the poor woman had urinated all over, and I didn't see it. I didn't smell too great. Well, we got her to the hospital, too. But she didn't get sober, either. I didn't always have luck. I think it's a disease that tells us I don't know. But it always strengthened my program. It always strengthened me. I don't want to be there. I don't want to be like that. I will do everything in my power to maintain my sobriety. And most alcoholics that come into the program, once you get it, you have a wonderful feeling about yourself. There's joy in your life. Oh, you have ups and downs. You have sickness. You have deaths. I had 4 deaths after I came in the program, one after another. My aunts, they all died. I was going downstate all the time. But it's part of life. Illnesses, deal with them. And then we always say that, the important thing of the spiritual part of this program, meetings, I tell you that all the time. There's something spiritual about these meetings. You always feel better when you leave. Could have a crappy day and still feel really good because there's some power in here, and I choose to call it God. Whatever you call it, there's some power. And we talk about service and sponsorship. We don't always have good luck with sponsorship, but the person has to want it. They have to want it. I wanted it. I didn't want that. I didn't want to have to do what I was doing. And so I didn't choose to go try it again. I was glad to be in this fellowship. And like I told you, my first sponsor was a nun. I knew her from the hospital. I didn't know her well. And when she led, she never talked about her addiction other than her alcohol to me, but she was drug addicted as well. And she was in rehab over a year. And she was tough. She was tough. You knew Angela. She was tough. Oh, man, she was tough. And she gave me good basic rules. And, you know, I thank God for her. She moved out to California, and she'd come see me. She'd say, are you going to meetings? Yeah, I'm going to meeting. Are you? No, they're terrible. They're terrible out there. They use bad language. They're terrible. They're terrible. I said, did you ever hear of a coffee pot and two people? That was the end of that conversation. I try to get to as many meetings as I can. I try to do service. When I first came in, I think I was in about a month maybe. And Angela said, there's a meeting in Butler or somewhere, and Sister Joan and I went. And I can remember Joan. Joan had about a year or more than I did. I had just come in. So I'm waiting for her. I'm driving. And one of their sisters comes out from their place, and she says, and I knew her, and I was talking to her, did you tell her where we were going? I said, no, I didn't tell her. I didn't tell her anything. She was so paranoid at that time about people knowing she's an alcoholic. I mean, I could be too, but in our place, they don't even think. You going to one of your meetings tonight? Kids at the phone. Where are you going tonight? They don't mean to be that way. They're just interested. So anyway, finally we got in the car, and she said, I said, I didn't tell her anything. I didn't tell her why I was here. So anyway, we went to that big meeting. I can't remember anything about it. But I got involved in service, general service, down the club every month, in Central Committee, GSR, DCM. We used to go to Evans City. And I don't know if anybody remembers John Myrie, he and I and Wilbur. And he'd say, you could drive. And Wilbur would say, thank God. Because Myrie was on the left-hand side of the road. You didn't know if you'd come alive. You don't know. Then we went to Attica four times, and he got a new car. And he said, you drive. And I learned a lesson. When you got a new car, you better have an hour to study it before you take it on the road. Well, anyway, I drove. Oh, he yelled, you're going too fast. You're going too fast. So we got to Angola. I said, here. And Wilbur said, what's wrong with you? You don't give him the keys. We'll never get there. Well, we did get there. And then the big surprise was when we got in there, and you have 13 gates clanking behind you. The guard says, need your watch. I need this. What's in your pocket? Stick it down. Took it. I said, took my gum. Holy crow. Well, I realized later why. So we would have meetings. Well, last time we went, they had some problem. So now nobody's allowed to come into, other than the official people are allowed to go into Attica. But it was an experience. It really was. And I used to do the pre-release group down by the prison every so often. So I've been around the town. And service is so important. Just to shake somebody's hand, make them feel welcome. You know, all of that is part of step 12, the involvement. All the steps are embodied in step 12, all of them. And it's a journey. It's a journey. And then when we say the prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change. I want to change everybody in my house. I didn't know it was me I needed to change. It was them. Finally, the prayer came to light. The courage to make the changes and to know the difference. And it's a beautiful way of life. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I'm not angry that I'm an alcoholic. I'm not angry if people say, you're an alcoholic? I don't care. If I can help you, that's where it is. Thank you. What's the matter with you?
This is the time of the meeting where we ask questions. And if anybody has a question, I figure.
Stephanie asked for this. My name's Rick Sutley. I'm an Elkie. And I'm so glad you mentioned some of the folks that were around, John Mowry, Carol, and you didn't mention Lamar, did you?
Who?
Lamar.
Oh my God, Lamar. That was another one.
I was going to ask you, with all your spiritual foundation.
What?
Since you become better, do you ever swear?
No, but I have a nun that swears down the hall every day. She's this big. Sister Jim. Yeah, probably. Damn it or something. But that's not swearing.
That's true.
And a priest told me I could do it in the car or any time.
Hey, thanks for that blunt answer.
Anyone else? We don't.
Oh, yes.
Kevin? Can somebody else ask a question other than Kevin? Right. Okay.
Thank you, Sister. Thank you very much for doing this. I know that it's a lot of work. You have to put a lot of work in. You can't just come and show up and do this.
You have to read over stuff. You don't just come cold turkey.
Yeah, and you did a great job, and I really appreciate it, and I think the group does also. When you're working with other people and they get to this 12-step, by now they're probably doing some kind of service work. Do you encourage people that to get more involved, or do you give them any direction on where you think maybe they could be of greater service?
Mm-hmm. I usually tell them to... They're able now to, after they have about a year, and after they have a year, I expect them to start sponsoring. I expect them to go to the club, to the service meetings, or anything that's being offered. They don't always do it, but I suggest it strongly. I appreciated the fact that my sponsor made me, suggest it strongly. Get involved. And and I try to. And even shaking hands, that was the first thing. I went to the 512. I don't know, you weren't in town at that time. Do you remember the Rick? Do you remember the 512 meeting? You were around. It was downtown. It was Saturday night, and it was a special meeting. Carol King and Kenny King ran it. Then when he died, that's one thing I have to reiterate. We don't own a meeting. We don't own it. And they did. And they would only leave certain people be chairpersons, certain people could lead, certain people, everybody didn't have that opportunity at that meeting. Well, defunct because of. You can't own a meeting. This is everybody's meeting. Huh? I know, and I had a worship. That was my first service. Angela said, get back there, empty the ashtrays, help with the cups, wash the dishes. And Sister Joan, was back in the kitchen. I had to help her. And I have something funny to tell you about her. When I had the infirmary, she called me all the time. Do you have this equipment? Do you have this? Who do you order from? Da 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 da. The other day the phone rings. It's she. Oh, a voice from the past. What do you need, Joan? She did. She needed the name of a company. But I said, you'll have to check with the infirmary. I'm not there anymore. So, but anyway, yeah, we cups and saucers, a cake and ice cream. But the thing that surprised me most was that everybody couldn't be part of it. But I remember walking, it was my first meeting after I came out of Gateway, Saturday night. Oh my God, I looked around and I knew more people there than... The whole world is going to know I'm here. I forgot about anonymity. But now, after all these years, who cares? If I can help you, that's important. If I can help you.
Sister, water alcoholic, thank you so much for coming and doing this for us. I'm curious, how long after you were introduced to AA did you start to feel a stronger spirituality, or did you?
Oh yeah, as the years go along and you're living these steps,
right,
it becomes part of you. It just automatically becomes part of you.
Right, but how long would you say you've been in the program before you were, as Bill Wilson says, rocketed into the fourth dimension?
Well, probably about 5 years.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Sister, I'd like to thank you. You did a terrific job. You're funny, cute as heck, and you really did a fabulous job. I've gone to see the sister a number of times.
Yeah.
For some conversations. She's fabulous. Anyone else? Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you for the flowers, and it was a privilege. And Kevin, thanks for the books.